Laura Ingram here. I'll see you this morning at 9 on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
In for Carlson, I'm Phil Vandervoort. Good morning, everybody. 6:34 here, 1 hour from now. The local grocery workers have authorized a strike. Negotiations are ongoing. So will you have to cross a picket line to get groceries? We'll get a little bit more sense of what's going to happen with that 1 hour from now. I guess he's the spokesperson for UFC W21, Tom Geiger. By the way, that is not an Ultimate Fighting sort of group. It's the union for the local grocery workers, UFCW. Sounds kind of like it would be mixed martial arts, but no, it's a union for the grocery store workers. So he'll join me in 1 hour, and then at 8 o'clock, we'll go to D.C. for the countdown to shutdown with just about 3 days and change left to reach a deal to avoid the government shutdown. Americans for Taxpayer Reform, Grover Norquist, will join me at 8:04. And then coming up in 30 minutes, it's Open Line Friday. So you can jump on the phone lines. We can talk about all these issues, including Iran. And joining me to talk about Iran, former CIA analyst. He's now a scholar at the Brookings Institution, author of numerous books, including, I think, the last two on Iran, if I understand correctly. Kenneth Pollack joining me here. Hi, Kenneth. Welcome to Seattle.
Thanks very much, Phil. Great to be here.
So you had an event. Was it last night or is it coming up tonight? It was last night.
That's okay. Right.
And it's all about your new book, Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, an American Strategy. Timely release. Did you know that this book was going to happen with all this UN stuff this week?
Well, I was thinking about the UN. I'll be honest with you. I didn't think that we would have Hassan Rouhani as the president of Iran, who, of course, he's the real newsmaker. He's the real stunning figure who's kind of turned everything on its head. But I figured that at the UN General Assembly, Iran would be a big topic because, at the very least, the Israelis and Prime Minister Netanyahu would make a big deal of it. But I couldn't have imagined this much hoopla.
Yeah. So let's start with what's timely, and that's just in the last few hours, or maybe it was even late last night. Our Secretary of State, John Kerry, Iran's foreign minister, they've reached an agreement on to set up some negotiations on the Iranian nuclear program. So how did that come about? Can you give us an idea of what they have agreed to or what this might consist of?
Sure. Well, we need to recognize this is the beginning of a negotiating process. And I think under most circumstances, any time the Iranians are involved and the United States is part of the other side, the negotiations tend to be very involved and they can take a long time. I think what's most interesting about this set of negotiations is, of course, that you have Rouhani coming into it saying before the negotiations ever start, we're not interested in building nuclear weapons. We want to strike a deal with you, giving all kinds of hints that he understands what we need and he's going to be able to meet us. We've even had Iran's supreme leader, the guy who really runs the country, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, indicate that he is interested in making some significant compromises. And so that's all very, very hopeful. But Rouhani has also said, look, I need to do this quickly, which is not something that we're accustomed to from the Iranians. Rouhani has been saying, I need to do this in 3 to 6 months. And what he's basically said is, look, I have serious opposition at home from the hardline wing of the Iranian government. They don't want these negotiations to go ahead. And if I can't show them very quickly that the negotiations are making progress, they're going to go nowhere. I'm going to get cut off at the knees. And I think that sets up some, obviously, a very high bar for these negotiations. And it really becomes incumbent on the United States and our allies to come back to the Iranians and demonstrate some real seriousness so that Rouhani is able to hold off his domestic foes.
So the agreement that we've got right now between Secretary of State John Kerry, Iran's foreign minister, I was just reading that they'll reconvene for some meetings October 15th and 16th. And are they going to do that in Geneva?
I've not seen the venue, but Geneva seems like a reasonable one. You know, they typically look for a neutral site. What we're going to have to see first and foremost is back in the spring, before we went into the Iranian elections, the United States and its allies, the permanent 5 members of the Security Council in Germany, put an offer on the table to the Iranians. The Iranians said nothing. And so I think the first thing is going to be, how do the Iranians respond to that? Are they willing to put an offer of their own on the table? You know, typically the Iranians are in receive mode when they go into these negotiations, and they leave it up to us to really table proposals.
So the U.S. kind of dictates things and says, you need to do X, Y, and Z, and then
And the Iranians kind of sit there and decide whether they want to, or they come back and they accuse us of mass genocide or all kinds of other nonsense.
under Ahmad Ahmadinejad, right?
Yeah, okay. This is just status. We've got a very different team in Iran. And in the past, with Ahmadinejad as the president and the hardliners very much in control, it was pretty clear the Iranians weren't taking the negotiations terribly seriously. What Rouhani has indicated is he takes the negotiations really seriously. He believes that they're important to Iran for getting the sanctions lifted, and he believes that they are important to him and his own political fortunes, because if he can get a victory in the negotiations with the Americans, that creates more political capital and more space for him at home to pursue some of the other reforms he'd like to pursue.
Talking to Kenneth Pollack, he's a former CIA analyst, a prolific author on things related to foreign affairs, Middle Eastern affairs. His new book is called Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy. He's actually here in Seattle this morning. And one of the other things that I wanted to ask about was a couple of interviews that the Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, has done. He did one with NBC's Ann Curry, and then he did another one with CNN's Christine Amanpour. And this is the one that seemed to get a whole lot of attention. And she asked him a question about the Holocaust, and he basically seemed to acknowledge the Holocaust, which was a vast difference from answers that used to get from the previous president, Ahmad Ahmadinejad. And then was it the news agency in Iran came out and said, hold on, CNN mistranslated what he said.
Exactly.
Can you explain what that was all about?
You know, as best I understand it, I have been trying to get to the bottom of it. Rouhani did say what we believed he said, what we hoped he said. And that's also consistent with things that he and the people around him have been saying in the past. Very famously, you know, he and his foreign minister tweeted on Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, right, tweeted Rosh Hashanah greetings to Jews all over the world, which was stunning.
Yeah, exactly.
Nancy Pelosi's daughter kind of came back and said on Twitter, you know, that's really nice of you, but it'd be really great if you would stop calling for Israel's destruction. And the foreign minister, Zarif, tweeted back to her and saying, that was only one man, he's gone, no other Iranians are calling for that. So this is very much in that same vein. But, you know, what you're pointing out, Phil, is actually, I think, something that's important to keep in mind, which is that, you know, a lot of people have been saying, you know, Rouhani is all talk and no action. We haven't, you know, all that matters is the actions. The fact of the matter is this talk actually is important. It has a cost for Rouhani. And what you're bringing up is exactly that. He got attacked savagely back home for making these statements. And as you're pointing out, all kinds of press organs of the Iranian government immediately tried to deny that he had said any of these things. So the things that he is saying, they are coming with a cost for him. They are not easy. They're not cheap for him to say. And we need to recognize that as, I think, a very important piece of evidence that Rouhani really is looking to change the relationship.
And I want to get into, you kind of referenced the hardline wing that says these things differently than maybe some of the pronouncements that are coming from the current president's mouth. And the Iranian people, can you stick around for a couple more minutes?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Got Kenneth Pollack with me. He's the author of a new book, Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy. And he's in Seattle. His previous book, Path Out of the Desert. I want to ask him a little bit about maybe the divide between Iranian people, because I've heard some incredible things about Iranian people that they do not detest America and the West the way that their hardline leaders do. So we'll get into that next as I sit in for John Carlson here at 6:43 here. Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Taking America back. Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Just off the Associated Press wires about 6-7 minutes ago. Dateline Vienna. I believe that's Austria the last time I checked. Iranian and UN officials upbeat at the end of talks on resuming a United Nations probe to determine whether Tehran, the Iranian capital, worked on atomic arms, their nuclear program, and a sign that Iran's new president is serious when he says he wants to reduce nuclear tensions. In for John Carlson, I'm Phil Vandervoort. It's coming up on 6:47 here, and joining me on the phone, he's the senior Fellow at the Sabin Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. New book, Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy. His name is Kenneth Pollack. He's in Seattle after an event last night. Kenneth, this kind of comes back to the UN, or pardon me, the Associated Press story that things are looking positive between the U.S. and Iran right now. And I guess that leads me to a question, because we kind of touched on some of these things with Israel. Who should be, in the previous segment, who should be most worried about Iran on September 27th, 2013? From this Associated Press story, we've got some positive-looking negotiations going. Who should be worried about Iran? The Iranian people, Israel, the United States, who?
Wow, interesting question. I mean, you know, in some ways you can make the case that any of those countries ought to be concerned about the Iranian government, including the Iranian people. You know, you might throw in Saudi Arabia and some of our other allies in the Middle East. You know, the point is that the Iranian regime has a pretty bad record over the last 34 years of creating problems, of mounting threats, of killing people all around the region, including Americans there. So there is reason to be concerned. And I would never say to anybody, you know, don't worry about what Iran is up to. Don't worry about the prospect that they might acquire nuclear weapons. You know, they're just like any other country. They're not like any other country. And we've seen that very clearly. But, you know, again, I think what's important, not to beat a dead horse, is that we have a real change in tone from the leadership today as a result of a clear desire for change on the part of the Iranian people.
And how much does your book get into this concept of a timeline for how close the Iranians might be with their nuclear atomic program to any sort of a feasible weapon?
Yeah, well, I've got a whole chapter on the nuclear program and its status and why people feel it is threatening and what the different arguments are, and also why the intelligence on it is probably different from what we experienced on Iraq. I mean, obviously, that's a very big consideration for me and for a lot of people who felt like, you know, our intelligence community badly failed us when it came to Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. And so I think there's a really important question to ask in terms of, you know, are we going to get it right this time? And, you know, what I'll say in a nutshell is, look, there's a lot that we don't know about Iran's nuclear program, but what we do know is that it would probably take them at least 4 to 6 months to just make the nuclear fuel for a bomb. And that's what people mostly fixate on. That's why you get these very alarming estimates about 4 to 6 months. But what nobody talks about is that you need something else beyond the fuel to make a nuclear weapon. You need the weapon itself, and that's very complicated. And all of the information that we have indicates that the Iranians are actually quite a bit farther away from having that weapon. It's why in the spring, both President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel said that Iran is at least a year away from having a nuclear weapon from a decision to start trying to get one. And no decision has been made. So it's not like a year from today they'll have a nuclear weapon. It's if they decided to, it would probably take them about a year from whenever they made that decision. And there's nothing to indicate that they've made that decision. And, of course, right now, all the evidence indicates they're not going to take that decision. They keep saying, we will not build nuclear weapons.
Yeah. And then maybe I'm going to try and ask a question that compares Pakistan and their nuclear weapon capability, and I guess their development of the program and their accessibility to that, to Iran. How long did it take Pakistan to reach that when they started, and A.Q. Khan was kind of the physicist weapons guy that managed to pull it off to obtain nuclear capability for Pakistan?
So, yeah, I'll be honest with you, Phil. I am not an expert on Pakistan or the Pakistani nuclear program. So, I mean, I know it took them
basically
over a decade.
Okay, trying to kind of compare and contrast. What kind of timeline are we on for Iran versus Pakistan?
Yeah, I mean, the hard thing with Iran, or actually in some ways the interesting thing about Iran is, first, they have been doing this for about 30 years. But what we've seen from the Iranians is it's very stop and start. There are times when they make effort on it. There are other times when they don't. And in the last 10 years, when they've made their most progress, what's really striking is, you know, the Israelis will tell you that in 2008, the Iranians had the capacity to build a nuclear weapon. And if they had wanted to, they could have given the decision to go, and they could have kind of gone at breakneck speed to just get a nuclear weapon. That was back in 2008. They did not do so. And what we've consistently seen from them is the Iranians seem to recognize our red lines, the Israeli red lines, and so they're doing things with their nuclear program specifically designed to not cross those red lines. So a great example, you remember last year at the UN, Prime Minister Netanyahu announces that if Iran acquires 250 kilograms, so about 500, 550 pounds, of this medium-enriched uranium, that will be enough to have a nuclear weapon, and that would be Bibi Netanyahu's red line. Well, what we've seen from the Iranians is they continue to enrich the uranium, but they refuse to get close to that 250 kilogram mark. So right now they're at about 185. As they enrich some, they turn other uranium into plates for their research reactor, which really can't be used for nuclear weapons. So it's the Iranians signaling, look, you know, we got this program. We're not stopping this program. It's a source of pride to us. The only way that we will agree to limits is through negotiations. But we get your concerns, and we're trying to make clear to you that we're not trying to do the things that are really of concern to you. It's a very interesting way to handle their program.
And then your former CIA analyst, do we have CIA people that are on the ground in Iran, maybe unable to access the sensitive areas that we would like to know more about? What do you think's going on in that regard?
If I knew, I couldn't tell you. but, you know, what I'll say is I hope so. You know, I certainly hope that we do, and I think that it's clear that our sources seem to have improved on Iran over the years. But, you know, Iran is a very difficult country to get access to, which is one of the reasons why probably the most important thing that we need in a deal from the Iranians is a very intrusive inspections regime along the lines of what we had in Iraq in the 1990s. And let's remember, we now know that those inspections in Iraq worked. We didn't realize it at the time. We thought they had failed, and it turned out after the war they had worked. And so that should give us a great deal of confidence that if we can get the same kind of inspection regime with Iran as part of this deal, we ought to have confidence that it can work as well. The key is going to be getting that.
Is that something Secretary Kerry will be asking for when they continue these negotiations with the Iranian foreign minister next month?
Absolutely. And again, what's interesting is that the Iranians have already signaled that they are willing to give us exactly that kind of an inspection regime. Now, again, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, so we got to see them sign on the dotted line, and we got to see them implement it. But, you know, they are saying that they understand the importance of these inspections, and they are ready to agree to it. And again, that's promising.
And if they sign on the line, and let's just say they sign on the line for a couple of things that the United States wants, but maybe not all of it, are we going to get into another red line situation the way we did with Syria, where if they stop cooperating, then what's our play, yeah, our trump card after that? Is it going to be back to threatening military involvement?
Right. Well, you're hitting the nail right on the head here, Phil. Nobody wants to go through another situation like that. I mean, I would compare it more toward what we went through with Saddam Hussein in the 1990s, where, remember, for a long time, he didn't comply with the inspections, and he actually was trying to hide his weapons of mass destruction for some time. And, you know, we lobbed cruise missiles at Saddam three times, and then we bombed him for 3 days, and eventually that was a very important element, perhaps the critical element, in the decision to actually go ahead and invade. So I think you're right. This is exactly the kind of situation that we need to avoid with the Iranians.
Let's get to my final question. I mentioned this earlier. The Iranian people seem to have an affinity. They don't detest the United States the way the hardline wing does. Social media is now becoming a factor. The Iranian regime, I think, lifted some of the restrictions on social media. Is that going to allow the Iranian people to maybe move beyond the controlling mullahs that make most all of these political decisions and get real revolution, real reform in Iran the way we've sort of seen in Egypt?
Boy, I hope so. And yeah, I think at some level there's no question that Iran is changing. Rouhani's election is a reflection of exactly the desire for change on the part of the Iranian people that you're talking about. You know, we've seen this since 1997. Whenever the Iranian people are allowed to vote for the leaders they want, they pick the leaders who most want to change their system. So I think there's no question the Iranian people would like to do so. What we've seen, though, is that the regime's hardliners, you know, want nothing to do with it. They crack down hard. So I think that the likelihood that we're going to see an Egypt-style revolution, probably unlikely. I mean, that actually happened in Iran. Remember, in 2009, the Iranians tried.
All right, and the vote was more or less overturned, and there you go, suppressed.
Exactly.
All right, Kenneth Pollack at the Brookings Institution, his new book, Unthinkable, Iran, the Bomb, and American Strategy, was just in Seattle last night. Thanks so much for all your time this morning.
Thank you for having me on.
All right. There's Kenneth Pollack. Sitting in for John Carlson, I'm Phil Vandervoort. Open Line Friday. We start it next.